President Joe Biden is in Poland.
President Putin ordered his tanks to roll into Ukraine. He thought we would roll over. He was wrong. The Ukrainian people are too brave.
Plus, reaction to Biden's trip to Kyiv.
It's a very good and powerful picture when the President of the United States travels in a war zone.
And later in the program, we'll meet some Ukrainian families who found a new life in Southern California. Today is Tuesday, February 21st. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Fresh from an unannounced visit to Ukraine, President Joe Biden rallied NATO allies in Poland on Tuesday, proclaiming unwavering support for Kyiv and a commitment to bolstering the alliance's eastern flank.
Well, I just come from a visit to Kyiv, and I can report Kyiv stands strong. Kyiv stands proud. It stands tall. And most important, it stands free.
The U.S. president spoke directly to what he saw as Russian President Vladimir Putin's aim when the full-scale invasion began nearly a year ago.
President Putin ordered his tanks to roll into Ukraine. He thought we would roll over. He was wrong. The Ukrainian people are too brave. America, Europe, a coalition of nations from the Atlantic to the Pacific, we were too unified. Democracy was too strong. Instead of an easy victory, he perceived and predicted, Putin left with burnout tanks and Russia's forces in disarray. He thought he'd get the Finlandization of NATO. Instead, he got the NATOization of Finland and Sweden.
And also directly to the people of Russia.
The United States and the nations of Europe do not seek to control or destroy Russia. The West was not plotting to attack Russia, as Putin said today. And millions of Russian citizens who only want to live in peace with their neighbors are not the enemy. This war is never a necessity. It's a tragedy. President Putin chose this war. Every day the war continues is his choice. He could end the war with a word. It's simple. If Russia stopped invading Ukraine, it would end the war. If Ukraine stopped defending itself against Russia, it would be the end of Ukraine.
On a trip clearly timed to overshadow a major speech by Russian President Vladimir Putin before the anniversary of the invasion, Biden met Polish President Andrzej Duda, one of the most vocal proponents of stronger Western support for Ukraine. President Biden looked back over the success of the past year, but also forward.
The defense of freedom is not the work of a day or of a year. It's always difficult. It's always important. As Ukraine continues to defend itself against the Russian onslaught and launch counteroffensives of its own, there will continue to be hard and very bitter days, victories and tragedies. But Ukraine is steel for the fight ahead. And the United States, together with our allies and partners, are going to continue to have Ukraine's back as it defends itself.
The visit was welcomed by ordinary Poles and by the 2.5 million Ukrainians, mostly women and children, refugees from the conflict, now living in the country. Many called for bolder Western support for Kyiv, including the supply of fighter jets, which Biden has so far held back from offering. As I mentioned, Vladimir Putin gave a speech too. He railed against the West in his annual State of the Nation address as he reiterated his justification for invading Ukraine 1 year ago. The AP's Charles de la Desma has more.
Год назад ради защиты Putin started his State of the Nation address by justifying his invasion of his neighbor, by accusing Western countries of threatening Russia. Russia's president said a year ago, in order to protect people on our historical lands, to ensure the security of our country, to eliminate the threat that came from the neo-Nazi regime that developed in Ukraine after the 2014 coup, it was decided to conduct a special military operation. And step by step, we will carefully and consistently solve the tasks before us. While Russia's constitution mandates the president deliver the speech annually, Putin never gave one in 2022 as his troops rolled into Ukraine and suffered repeated setbacks. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
In that speech that Charles de Ledesma just told us about, Putin said that he was suspending Russia's participation in the New START nuclear proliferation treaty, saying he will not allow NATO nations to inspect their nuclear weapons. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in Athens as part of his visit to Europe, had this to say when asked by reporters.
The announcement by Russia that it's suspending participation in New START is deeply unfortunate and irresponsible. We'll be watching carefully to see what Russia actually does. We'll, of course, make sure that in any event we are postured appropriately for the security of our own country and that of our allies. You know, when the administration started, we extended New START because it was clearly in the security interests of our country and actually in the security interests of Russia. That only underscores what an irresponsible action this is.
Blinken reiterated that the U.S. remains ready to talk about strategic arms reduction anytime with Russia, regardless of whatever else is going on. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said on Tuesday, the United States is in no position to tell China what to do regarding the Ukraine crisis, as it is the United States, not China, that has been pouring weapons into the battlefield. Wang spoke at a news briefing responding to comments by Secretary of State Blinken, who said recently that China knows what it will face if it provides lethal support to Russia. Wang continued,
the U.S. has been by far the largest supplier of weapons to Ukraine, and the U.S. announced Monday it would provide another $500 million U.S. dollars in military aid to Ukraine. But the U.S. has been disseminating disinformation that China supplied Russia with weapons. What is the true intention behind the U.S. moves? The U.S. says again and again that it will work to maintain peace. But in reality, it has been profiting from the fighting as its military defense enterprises have gained enormous fortune from the battlefield in Ukraine. Where is the U.S. conscience?
He added that the China-Russia Comprehensive Strategic Partnership of Coordination is built on the basis of non-alliance, non-confrontation, and not targeting third countries. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. President Joe Biden visited the Ukrainian capital on Monday, ahead of the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion. During his visit, he met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and pledged more military aid. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell has a look.
As Russia's invasion of Ukraine approached a grim anniversary this week, it was Joe Biden, not Vladimir Putin, striding through Kyiv on a sunny Monday morning.
Presumptuous of me to say this, but I thought it was important. Let the President of the United States be here.
Biden was supposed to depart for Poland on Monday, but instead flew via Germany to Poland and then made a 10-hour train ride to Kyiv, where he delivered a strong message about a conflict that he has described as a battle between autocracy and democracy.
Democracy stands. The Americans stand with you, and the world stands with you.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky welcomed Biden's announcement of an aid package worth nearly $500 million. But analysts warned that the optimism may be premature. On Monday, Russian authorities claimed they had captured a crucial town in the nation's east. Matthew Droin is a visiting fellow in the Europe, Russia, and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It is far from over, unfortunately. The fights are still raging, and both Ukraine and Russia still think that they can prevail militarily. So obviously we're far from this, and the situation on the ground shows it.
And he said Biden's visit to Kyiv does not make Putin look good.
Obviously for Vladimir Putin, having the president of the United States being in Ukraine just a few days before the anniversary is, of course, a very, very bad signal.
The White House says it informed Russian authorities hours ahead of Biden's visit. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, who briefed reporters after Biden left, said he could not describe Washington's message to Moscow or Moscow's response because of the sensitive nature of those communications. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
So, as we know, Joe Biden made a surprise visit to Kyiv on Monday and announced more military aid for Ukraine. For some local reaction, I reached out to Oleksiy Sorokin, senior editor of the Kyiv Independent.
It's a very good and powerful picture when the president of the United States travels in a war zone. Obviously, Kyiv is not in danger of being encircled or anything like that, but it's still a country at war. We saw the air raid sirens going on during Biden's visit. And for the president of the United States, who's probably the most protected person in the world, to visit this kind of city means a lot for Ukraine. I think it serves as a very big moral boost, not only for the people on the streets, but for Ukraine's armed forces, for Ukrainian leadership. And also, it is a very good contrast to today's speech by Russian President Putin, who for 2 hours was repeating the whole mantra about Ukrainian neo-Nazis, about the West starting the war, about how Russia is defending itself. And this kind of picture, which every Ukrainian obviously sees, because unfortunately we have to follow what the Russian president says, I think it kind of shows that we are on the right side of history, that we are doing everything right, and with the support of the world that Biden kind of assembles, we're going to win this war.
So then it's safe to say that Putin's speech wasn't really believed or wasn't really taken seriously in Ukraine, in Kyiv.
Well, we have to unfortunately take seriously what he says, because exactly a year ago, he had a speech where he kind of laid out his understanding of the world, right, where he said that Ukrainian nation doesn't exist, that Ukraine was invented by Lenin, that Russia must take back Russian lands. On the 21st of February 2022, he proclaimed the so-called independence of Russian-controlled occupied regions of eastern Ukraine. So we still have to take him seriously. We still have to listen to what he says. But obviously, nobody believes it. It's just for our understanding what to expect from Russia going forward.
Oleksiy, is there anything else you'd like to say to our audience that I might have forgotten to ask you about when we're talking about the reaction to the two speeches?
I think it's important that to point out what Josep Borrell, the foreign minister, I would say, of the European Union said, is that Ukraine is receiving a lot of applause, but not enough weapons. And for that, I would say that obviously $500 million in military aid by Biden is crucial. It's very important, and it will definitely help Ukraine to protect its statehood. But Ukraine is asking for long-range missiles. Ukraine is asking for military vehicles, for jets. And I think any Western leader would definitely do the right thing and boost kind of his standing in the world if going forward these Ukrainian asks would be met.
Oleksiy Sorokin is executive editor of the Kyiv Independent. Oleksiy, thank you for taking the time to be with me today.
Thank you.
Much of the news today is all about Joe Biden and his visits to Kyiv and Warsaw. But in Ukraine, the war continues. Anna Chernikova gets us up to speed on the latest from the east and the south of the country.
Yeah, heavy shelling continue across Ukraine, especially in the areas, in the south areas and in the eastern areas. And today it was a really bad shelling of the city of Kherson again. And this time, Russian forces hit the bus stop, hit the residential area, the kindergarten, and also some infrastructure facilities. Unfortunately, this shelling caused 6 people killed and 12 wounded. These are the numbers we have for this moment. Hopefully, this is not going to change, but unfortunately, you know, everything could happen. And unfortunately, Kherson remains under the shelling. And also, it was another bad shelling in the Kharkiv region. And in general, Kharkiv region is kind of getting back, you know, closer to this front line in Donetsk region. But Kharkiv region is like a pre-front line area at the moment, and very bad shellings and very intensive shellings are happening there as well. And another one happened in the city of Kupiansk, which is not far from the city of Izum, that was also liberated back months ago together with the city of Izum, so in this big counteroffensive by Ukrainian forces. And we're hearing, of course, a lot of the shelling in the Donetsk region, which remains the hottest spot for this point of time.
Now, Anna, you said that a kindergarten in Kherson was hit. Do we know if any of the casualties were there?
For the moment, we only have information that that the casualties happen, most of the casualties at the bus stop. At least we don't have separate information on that. I think that if there would have been casualties in the kindergarten, we would have get that. So for the moment, we know about casualties from the bus stop mostly.
And is there any more word from the front lines on either Ukrainian or Russian casualties in the battles?
Again, in terms of military casualties, we don't really have official information from Ukrainian side, from Ukrainian military. We have official information from the Ukrainian general staff regarding Russian casualties every day. And today, the number was over 700. It's not only Donetsk region, it's in general. But we understand that most of casualties are currently happening, of course, in the Donetsk region. Situation in Bakhmut remains extremely, extremely difficult, but the city is under Ukrainian control and Russian forces do not move forward. So Ukrainian forces keep their positions. However, yesterday it was a slight information regarding some success of the Ukrainian forces in a couple of settlements. But again, this is something that we cannot verify independently. So in general, when we look at the official map of the battles, we can see that line around Bakhmut is not changing for the moment. So battles are going on, and very heavy battles are going on.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
As the war in Ukraine grinds on and nears its one-year mark, the war-torn country is urging its allies to keep the flow of weapons and other support coming. This despite talk of Ukraine fatigue in the West. Nola Haynes is a political scientist at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. She tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that now is not the time for the West to lose its resolve in supporting Ukraine.
I understand that maybe some Ukraine fatigue can be setting in. People are worried about China, what's going on with the balloons and the objects. There are a lot of things that are going on, and people are asking, rightly so, how much longer are we going to be in Ukraine? And the answer is, we have to get this done. Ukraine must win. Russia cannot continue its illegal invasion into Ukraine and beyond, and that's what's important. That's what's at stake. And it at first, you know, when a lot of this happened last year, a lot of folks like me, we were talking about how important this is so it won't be another world war in Europe. But what's at stake is larger now, because what happens in Ukraine can possibly dictate what happens in Taiwan, can possibly dictate what happens in South Korea. So the stakes are high.
There is, as you say, Ukraine fatigue, and there is, surveys have shown that there is waning support for the billions of dollars that the U.S. is spending on helping Ukraine. Do you think that that is going to change in the next few months?
Well, probably not. But what I want to break down, you know, when you hear those numbers, it's like, oh, my goodness, we're sending so much money to Ukraine. But what's included in that large number that is so scary, are military capabilities. So we're also sending hardware. There are about seven different categories where those large numbers of security packages, there are about seven different categories of support that we are sending to Ukraine. But it gets totaled up, and that's the number that gets reported out to the public.
What about a diplomatic solution? Is that even still possible?
You know, diplomacy is always on the table. You know, the United States always leads with diplomacy first. But again, this isn't the United States fighting Russia. This is Ukraine fighting Russia. So Ukraine has goals that they want to meet, and we are helping to support that. While at the same time, Zelensky introduced, you know, a kind of rough draft of a peace plan a while ago. And from what I understand, you know, that's still being worked through. Right now, the plan is to continue to support Ukraine. And I know that that's a hard pill to swallow, but it needs to get done because Russia cannot win this war.
Nearly a year ago, tens of thousands of Ukrainians sought refuge in the United States as Russian troops invaded their country. Mike O'Sullivan spoke with two Ukrainian families in California about their lives 1 year later.
Ukrainian children play in the city of Santa Monica, watched over by their parents, two families adapting to new lives in the United States. They're among the thousands who fled Ukraine and entered California through Tijuana, Mexico, under special temporary resettlement programs. Displaced Ukrainian Natalia Miknova.
It was a difficult way through Mexico with two kids, but now we are happy that we are here. We are in safety, we are in a good society, good environment, and especially this place, Santa Monica, we love it.
Her two daughters are adapting and doing well in school, where Natalia is a volunteer classroom parent. And through her work at a nonprofit organization, the International Institute of Los Angeles, she helps other Ukrainians rent an apartment, enroll their children in school, and deal with any problems.
And I have a list of solutions. If you have this problem, you can do this. If you have this problem, you can do this, this, this.
Some issues, however, are difficult to solve. Married couple Olga and Petro Kovalchuk, physicians from Ukraine, say that getting jobs as doctors in America is not easy. Both are ear, nose, and throat specialists, and they are studying for the English language exam to become licensed physicians in the United States. Medical doctor Petro Kovalchuk.
It's our passion. Medicine is real, our passion.
Working to re-enter their profession as they raise three small children.
When they go to home after school, I think, oh my gosh.
They are very noisy.
Yes, they are very noisy, very active. They want
to play, to sing, to cry, yeah. To scream.
For these families, there are reminders of the brutal war in their homeland and the ongoing threat to loved ones still in Ukraine, says Natalia Miknova.
And every day we read this news. And we are upset. It's difficult.
These displaced Ukrainians are happy to be in a place that is safe for their children and grateful for the help they have received from ordinary Americans, government programs, and aid groups. Petro Kovalchuk.
We are strong and we are young. And thank you, God, and thank you, Americans, that we are here.
But he says as temporary residents of the United States, they face an uncertain future here, while war continues to rage in their homeland. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Santa Monica, California.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.